Spring training coverage presented by Kona Big Wave.
D-back spring training. Live from Salt River Fields at Talking Stick. Burns and Gambo on Arizona Sports 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app.
I feel like we've set up Paul Sewald with some really big expectations for this segment.
Why?
Number one, well, two reasons. Number one, Mitch just described his outing as dazzling today during the Sports Center update. That's number one. And number two, Corbin Carroll was just on our set a second ago, and all he could talk about was your leadership, alpha male, came right in, set the tone, et cetera, et cetera. We set a high bar for you, Paul. I hope you're ready to match that today.
It's too high, because I wouldn't have said dazzling. That's not how I would have described today, but I'll take it.
We do this show every day. Mitch has never said our performances were dazzling
after
a show.
We're not dazzling.
I was going to say, you need to give me something, Gambo.
Not one show's been dazzling.
We're passable. I mean, we're okay, you know? We're fine. I don't know we're dazzling.
Mitch.
Paul Sewald, the dazzling Paul Sewald, joining us here on the first game.
You on the mound when you got the play at the plate where the guy was out?
Yep.
Now, it's tough to see everything from here. Who made that throw to the plate?
Jace Peterson.
That was a great throw.
It was a dime. Yeah.
That was a great throw.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, got the guy out of the plate. That was a terrific
play.
Yeah,
but I need those during the season. I don't really care about those during spring training. Stats don't care. I don't need those now. I need those in 2 weeks.
Chase, don't waste the bullets now.
100%.
100%. Save that stuff, man.
So you'd rather he be safe.
Might as well.
And be out in a couple of weeks.
I don't think I'm getting cut by giving up runs.
No.
Who cares?
No. I remember having you on last year, and you were pitching so well in the postseason, and I think you've been talking about, like, you know, you want something to prove yourself after the previous postseason performances.
Yep.
I mean, going into that final game against Texas, I mean, you've got to be really happy with the way you performed. I mean, you get game in and game out. I think you went like 8 or 9 games without giving up a run. Yep. You were lights out in the postseason going into that final game. How did you feel overall when the season was over?
Fantastic. I mean, we were 3 wins away from being world champions. So, I mean, just an incredible run by us. And it was quite the roller coaster of a year for me, but it ended on about as high a note as there possibly is. And the World Series didn't end the way we all wanted to, but, you know, you can't be disappointed in last season just because you don't win the last 4 games of the season. So we were pretty excited. I was excited personally. And, you know, we're just excited to get going too.
When you were traded here, did you look at this as a team that could have made a deep run to the World Series or no?
I just think it's difficult to say if I would have thought we could go to the World Series given how the Dodgers had played, how we had played against the Dodgers, how good the Braves had been. You know, you just, especially when you're under league, you don't really even understand, you know, what's going on in the National League. Or now I won't know as much about the American League. So it's hard to know exactly how good we were. I knew we were leading baseball and leading the National League on July 1st. That's, you know, half the season. If you're the best team in the National League, that's a pretty good sign. But, you know, it's hard to see exactly how good we could have been because we just didn't get to play the Diamondbacks when I was in Seattle. So, but I knew the team was talented, and I knew we had plenty of guys that could help us get to that point. And it sounded like all they said was we need somebody at the back end. And
they did.
I said, I'm decent at that. Why don't, like, hopefully I can help the team. And everyone clicked right when it mattered most.
And that's kind of my question for you. Paul Sewald, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show, is okay, so you got Corbin describing you as kind of an alpha male. You stepped into the room, and it was leadership right away. How much were you aware of what void needed to be filled on this team in terms of that ninth inning role, in terms of that alpha male voice, and kind of almost self-talking yourself into, okay, I'm going to fill that void the minute I walk in the door?
Yeah.
What kind of confidence did you have that you were going to be able to fill that empty spot the minute you walked in?
Well, on the field, you know, I have a lot of confidence in myself. I've had 3 really, really good years since I transformed who I was as a pitcher. I knew that the on-the-field thing, as long as I just got myself back into the right mental state, was hopefully going to be no problem. And I did an okay job of that. I could have been a little bit better, but I think I pitched pretty decently. But, you know, it's a team that I don't know. I didn't know anything about the team. And then I come over and we lose 9 straight. And so I'm not sure, you know, and I don't get my job done the first time. I'm just trying to be hands-off, like not try to take over the group. But then you kind of see that it's like, hey, we need a little bit of guidance. And being on a team that had been to the postseason, I kind of felt like I could add a couple of things. And no one struggled like me, and no one's had success like me in a roller coaster of a career. So I just feel like I can help a lot of people in the fact that I've been through almost anything, whether it's getting optioned or whether it's being ineffective, that sort of stuff. I've had plenty of that on leading into how good I've been in the last couple of years. So I just tried to help young guys with a lot of stuff.
Paul Sewald, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show, we've remarked about it many, many times, the transformation of the bullpen from your perspective. When I mean, a lot of people would say it was you when you arrived. From your perspective, when did this unit start to transform into something where it was dominant during the postseason, and it's become a thing where, quite frankly, we always talk about the bullpen around here during the offseason? I don't think we've had one conversation about it so far. Everyone's so sure about what's down there.
Yeah, I think it's a credit to everyone making adjustments and continuing to try and get better throughout the season. You don't need to peak on April 1st or even July 1st. You know, you just want to, you want to be at a decent level, because obviously the goal is to make sure you meet a standard to get to the postseason. But the key is to peak in the postseason, just like we did last year. That's how we showed everybody that 84 wins doesn't matter. As long as you get in, you have a chance. If you play your best, you can beat anybody. So I think it was a credit to Mike bringing me over, and then Ryan Thompson came over, and then Joe kind of really made it an adjustment and kind of started to be his best self, his all-star self again. And next thing you know, you have four or five guys that you really trust to put zeros all at the same time on top of Ginkle's incredible season that he had through and through. So I think it was just one thing after another, and then next thing you know, in the middle of September, it felt like, okay, like, if we can get there, like, we have some very good bullpen guys that we can kind of throw out there, and we can kind of mix and match a righty here, a lefty there, a down righty, a high righty. And you just, I think we just have a group that has a lot of everything you could need in a pen.
Even the kid Saufrank coming up out of nowhere to give you guys 10 games of
no
runs.
Perfect. He was perfect.
Right.
He hadn't given up a run when we got to the postseason. So just a credit to everyone. There were just, we kind of transformed what the bullpen looked like when I got there into a different pen.
Yeah.
And then the people who were still there, the stalwarts, were kind of found themselves right there in September.
The last time we were out here, we got a chance to talk to Suarez. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. He just likes to be called Gene. Is that what it is?
Gino.
We talked to Suarez. Good vibe Suarez. Just good vibe Suarez.
Good vibes only.
Man, what a great high character guy he was. I was blown away by just how personable he was. He spoke very highly of you. You know him better than we do. What kind of player are they getting here?
D-backs fans are going to love him. They're going to love him. He's just the best. And the players in the clubhouse will love him even more. We might have to fight over the first win celebration. He did ours in Seattle, and then I kind of took over when I came over here. So maybe he and I have to brawl to see who's going to be in charge.
Celebration?
You know, a little conversation of, hey, way to go type thing. And right, he led ours in Seattle, and then we didn't have one here when I came over. And I said, hey, I think we should do a little sum-sum. So kind of became my thing. So maybe Gino and I are going to have to fight and decide who gets to do that.
Okay. Do you know how to fight?
No.
Okay.
I mean, but we'll see.
I don't mind training you a little bit. I got a boxing background.
We'll see. So
I don't know if he meant like a physical fist
no,
fight.
No, absolutely a physical fight.
Oh, you're a physical fight. Okay, he was. All right, you were talking about
it. When we win
fight
on March 28th, the other one will be out for the rest of the season. But the other will be really poised.
That'll
to
be totally worth it. I mean,
I love it. I think it's totally worth it. You know, we had a guy in Mark Reynolds here for a number of years. I don't know if you remember Mark Reynolds. He was very, very, you know, high strikeout, lots of home runs, good defensively at third base. Is it similar?
That sounds like Gino.
So Gino's Mark Reynolds.
I think that's a pretty decent comp for D-backs fans. Somebody that you're going to get familiar with. He was an absolute Gold Glove snub last year. The fact that he wasn't a finalist was a joke. Played in 162 games. I mean, what more could you ask for?
Oh.
They tried to give him a day off late, and he said, no shot. Like, I'm going to play because I'm playing 162. And so that's just who we have. I mean, that's a guy who's already made plenty of money, right? His kids don't have to worry about anything. He's still going out there and wants to play 162. So, fans, you want to make sure that he's driving the ball to right center. When he's driving the ball to right center, we're gonna have a great Gino.
We had a conversation with Gino about the first time Torey Lovullo comes up to him and says, hey, yeah, you're good. You're going to get today off. And you talk about fighting. You know, not that we would expect him to go after his manager, but he seems very prepared for when that moment happens and what his response is going to be, you know?
That'll be interesting to see. He's just a gamer. He just wants to play every single opportunity. I'll be kind of interested to see the first time he gets a day off, because he doesn't want days off. He wants to go out there, and he wants to compete, and he wants to post. And
it's not Torey.
That's who we want. That's who we want at third base.
Yeah. That's not Torey.
No.
That's not Torey.
Torey does like to give the guys the day off. We just had Corbin in here a minute ago, as we talked about earlier with Paul Sewald, and he was talking about, man, I still feel like there are things I need to work on before we break this camp and go. Now, that might be him. He might be a bit of a perfectionist and a bit of a workaholic, and that's all great. Do you feel like there's still things you need to work on, or are you like, hey, let's fast forward and let's get to March 28th, I'm ready to go?
No, I think if you don't feel like you have anything to work on for the next 10 days, you're in a rare spot. That maybe you peaked in how you're feeling maybe a little bit too early. In my perspective, everyone should still be working for another 10 days, right? Like, and then on March 28th, there's no work. It's just compete. It's just whatever you have to do to get a win. I still have plenty of things I need to go out there and do. I need to make sure that my slider's a little crisper and my fastball is at the top rail a little bit more, and I need the changeup to be more consistently in the zone to try and give myself a chance to get swing and misses and weak contact. And a great one and a bad one is not good enough. We need more good ones, or even average ones as my worst ones. So, all of us should still have a couple of things that they need to work on. Now, hopefully everyone's trending in the right direction, right, so it doesn't feel like you're not – it shouldn't feel foreign out there. Strami and I talked after the game, after my outing, and it was like, okay, you threw a bad one, then you threw a good one. That means I'm getting closer to where I want to get to, right? I can make an adjustment in a game right now where your first outing, if you don't have it, you don't have it. And you're just like, okay, well, good thing I have 9 more appearances to kind of work on something. But, you know, everyone should be still working on a something, and especially the guys who, like Corbin, aren't fighting for a spot. You know, Corbin, go down to the minor league games and try and get 20 at-bats in a day and make sure you're feeling whatever you need to feel. So there's plenty of guys that I think have plenty to work on still.
You came from the American League to the NL. We're seeing it this year with Dylan Cease, Glasnow. You've got Yamamoto coming over. What's it like? You're not a hitter, but what's it like when these new pitchers come over? They don't know the league. Is there an advantage for the pitcher or is it an advantage for the hitter?
I would say there's probably an advantage for the pitcher.
For the pitcher.
Not having hitters seen them too much.
Okay.
So, although Shohei followed me right into this league, so that's great that I have to face him 10 more times. But I can pick people that I wouldn't want to have to face. But, you know, if somebody hasn't seen you, that certainly gives you an advantage. And I think when I transformed what I did and moved to a different league, that helped me a lot. And the fact that people had no at-bats against a high fastball sweeping slider, Paul Sewald, versus what they had seen in New York. And that's part of the reason that I think I tried to have a changeup this year is now I'm starting to have a lot of at-bats against people with how I throw. How can I throw something they haven't seen before? Today was a perfect example getting to face Seth Brown for, I don't know, the dozen time that I've seen him, obviously, in the AL West. And even when he got thrown out of home and I got to ask him, like, hey, how'd you, like, that's the best changeup I have. Why'd you take that? Because, you know, that's what I got. We've had plenty of conversations and try and get feedback from guys of like, okay, that's what I saw. And
interesting.
So it'll be interesting to see, you know, try and throw changeups to people who have not seen them. You will see how it goes.
Yeah. Good stuff. Paul, always a pleasure to have you on the show. You're always a great conversation, man. We appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for having
me. You met the high bar.
Fantastic.
You dazzled
fantastic.
Us.
Don't use the E word around Torrey, right? We're not using expectations right
now. No.
Standard.
You're right. We're not using the E word around Torrey. You met the standard of the Burns and Gambo show today.
Perfect.
We appreciate that.